hungry, but it's cold AF in Minnesota.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I'm the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_beeble. First of all, apologies to any of you guys who are watching this on YouTube. Literally setting up the show, ready to go. Camera working fine. Push record, camera stops working. So I'm using the shitty inbuilt camera in the computer as my external camera. My external HD camera has shit itself right before recording, so you can see this grainy, horrible image of me up on the screen. The audio should still be fine, and if it's not, let me know, because this has just thrown a complete spanner into the works of what I was trying to do. But hopefully we get that fixed soon, as soon as I can get myself a new camera. But this one has just completely shit itself at the worst possible time. Would have been great to have done it on the weekend, I would have had time to go and buy it and all that sort of stuff. But no. Just before recording today. But what we're going to do in today's show is we're going to talk about the four games from Sunday. We're going to preview a 10-game Monday. We're also going to look ahead to the rest of the week and help you set weekly lineups, help you set your streaming strategies for daily changes leagues, and also talk about the three teams that aren't in action on Sunday and Monday, and talk about any interesting stuff that may have happened with them over the weekend. So
let's get to it.
Oh, that is a really, really good idea, Michael Bolton. Let's start off by looking at the week ahead and looking at the week 10 in the NBA schedule. It is the week leading up to Christmas. Christmas Day is next Monday, so we've got a little bit of a different schedule this week. On Monday, we have 10 games. Tuesday, we have 3 games. Wednesday, we have 12. Thursday, we have 5. Friday, 9. And Saturday, 13. And Sunday being Christmas Eve, there are no games on. So the games are packed more tightly into the week. So if we're looking from a daily changes league point of view, the only two clear-cut streaming days are Tuesday and Thursday. When there's 3 games on the Tuesday, there's 5 games on the Thursday. You might be able to find someone to play on Friday or have room on your roster and your active spots on Friday. You won't be able to do it Wednesday. You won't be able to do it Saturday. You may be able to do it Monday. But Tuesday, Thursday are the days that we should be looking at when talking about streaming action. And there's only two teams that play both Tuesday and Thursday. It's the Philadelphia 76ers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. In fact, the Cavs play just 2 games this week, but both of those games are on low scheduled days. So while it might seem, oh man, I'm going to pick up J.R. Smith, or I'm not going to pick up Tristan Thompson or Jay Crowder because they've only got 2 games, you might actually be able to use those 2 games that those guys play, and that might be way more useful than someone else who only plays, say, 1 game or 1 useful game this week. Or say like the Orlando Magic, they have 3 games, but none of them come on low volume days. The Warriors have 4 games this week, and none of them come on low volume days. So you might be looking at, oh, do I add Jordy Bell? Do I add Omri Caspi, Pat McCaw, given the injuries there? But you might not even be able to play any of those guys because the Warriors play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So that is very important. So game volume is something to look at, but it's when the games are played and whether you can actually use these players, which becomes really important. In fact, there's a bunch of the teams that play 4 games that don't have any games on those low volume days. The Warriors don't, the Blazers, the Heat, the Mavericks, the Hornets, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Hawks, and the Thunder are all teams that play 4 games, and none of those 4 games are on either Tuesday or Thursday, meaning any sort of ads from those teams may not actually be to your benefit depending on how your roster looks and if you've got active spots on those other days. So that is something, of course, that you need to bear in mind. When we have a look at the rest of the week, we want to look from weekly league point of view. We're looking at teams. This is where volume is more important because you're not worried about streaming in and out. The 4-game teams, the Hawks, the Celtics, Hornets, Bulls, Mavs, Nuggets, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Heat, Thunder, Sixers, Suns, Blazers, Spurs, and Jazz. And then for 3 games, it's Nets, Rockets, Pacers, Grizzlies, Bucks, Wolves, Pelicans, Knicks, Magic, Kings, Raptors, and Wizards. And there are 2 teams that play just 2 games, and that's Cleveland and Detroit, meaning that unless you have LeBron James, you are unlikely to start any Detroit players or any other Cleveland players this week. You'll be looking at many of those other guys from other teams. So your Andre Drummonds, your Toby Harris's, Reggie Jackson's, Kevin Love's, perhaps you don't even look to start him. Dwayne O'Wade. For the Cavs, who else? Avery Bradley, well, he's injured anyway, so we're not going to see much there. Reggie Bullock, who's looking to put up some good numbers recently, just two games next week, so is it really worth it considering these two big games have come in the games that Avery Bradley has been out? So, yeah, some interesting decisions that need to be made, because you might go and look, oh man, Reggie Bullock, two strong games in a row, don't use him at all next week, especially in a weekly changes league, and then Bradley's back, and then he goes back and plays 20 minutes a night and really has very, very limited use. So that all that stuff is really important. Of course, Matt Smith has written all this up over on Basketball Monster. You can go and check out his article, and you can check out our schedule analyzer over there to give you the ease of all the teams, you know, how it all looks for the week, and specific to your team and players that are available that may be of use to you during the coming week. That is always that's always good to pay attention to. Let's now have a look at a few teams that didn't play over or didn't play Sunday and won't play Monday, and talk about anything interesting that's going on with them. The Memphis Grizzlies are one of those teams. Not a massive amount of interest with them. Jim Ennis was out of the rotation, but did come back in the game that Chandler Parsons rested across the back-to-back Friday-Saturday. Interesting to see whether he actually remains in the rotation or not. But one thing we had been talking about last week is the play of Andy Harrison, who'd really, you know, come on. The last two games, yeah, not so much. And he saw his minutes reduced because, well, honestly, he's not really that good. So that sort of any value that you may have thought that he had in 12 or 14 team leagues was quickly erased. Mario Chalmers has been getting more playing time, but he's been doing very little with him. One game was okay across the weekend, one not so good. So there's not a huge amount to see there with Charmo. While Tyreke Evans returned from his hip problem and ready to go, while Marc Gasol had a good game. I was going to say finally, he's had some good games. He just has appeared disinterested, but he did put up a pretty good performance across the weekend for the Grizzlies. The Milwaukee Bucks, they did waive the mitten, Gary Payton II, so they could sign, and this is purely because Jason Kidd is a massive fan of this podcast, they signed the sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. And I'm going to do that again, because the plug came out. There we go. Technology is really not my friend today. So Sean Kilpatrick has been signed by the Bucks. But one thing we have to remember with Kilpatrick, he had some okay numbers last year. He could not get minutes on the Nets, right? He got waived. He couldn't get minutes. Now the Bucks are dealing with injuries to Tone Snell. They're dealing with injuries to Matt Dellavedova. They're dealing with injuries to Jason Terry. But what sort of role is Kilpatrick going to have? We've got, yeah, Payton had been starting. DeAndre Liggins went from playing, and this is again just part of Jason Kidd's absolute coaching genius. Back to back on the weekend, one game Liggins plays 2 minutes. The next game, you know what? I was really impressed with you in those 2 minutes, Ligo. So now you're going to start. Rashad Vaughn, 28 minutes, 10 minutes. Nothing makes any sense with this guy. And then all the while, you have Brogdon that plays 40 minutes and then plays 26 minutes. Nothing makes sense with this dude. And now we're adding another variable into that mix where he could get 17 minutes, he could play 20 minutes, he could play 10 minutes when Terry comes back, because of course it is December, and once the calendar hits December, veterans play all the time. That is the Jason Kidd mindset, again, which makes no sense to anyone with any semblance of logic or common sense. How does it all fit together? So I'm not going and adding the sexy boy. Maybe you're in a 20-team league, you might get some value while Terry and Snelly and Dally are all out. Maybe you get some value there. But again, we're still going to see Rashad Vaughn. We're still going to see DeAndre Liggins. We're still hopefully going to see Malcolm Brogdon. And it's still going to be a complete shit show and variable rotations that make no sense to the outside viewer. Or to be honest, anyone who's in the inside as well that's not named Jason Kidd, who I feel like he just does anything without any planning or consultation with anybody. But you're well aware that I don't think that Jason Kidd is a very good coach. The New Orleans Pelicans, Etuan Moore, continuing, you know, his solid play, didn't quite shoot quite as well as what he had been, but he is still a decent enough guy for 12-team leagues. And Rajon Rondo, after that strong effort, I think earlier in the week, where he's putting up big numbers, and as soon as Rajon Rondo has a big game, people are quick to chirp at me with a tweet, how's Rondo looking now, mate? Well, he's faded a little bit on these last two games, and I think what we've seen in the last couple of games is probably more representative of the Rondo we'll get moving forward rather than those monster performances he was putting up. He'll still have some of those, no doubt, but they're 18 assist games, the triple doubles. He's more likely to be an 8-7-7 sort of guy rather than a 15-15-15 sort of a play, which is what the sort of numbers he was flirting with, I guess, in those couple of good performances. I still believe that he should be owned everywhere, despite my distaste for him as a player. Yeah, and that's all the... Oh, yeah, Boog, Tone Davis. The Tone Davis back in action, obviously. Tone Allen's out for a few weeks with a fractured leg. He's not going to be a big part of anyone's fantasy league. Anyway, let's talk monstrous line of the night. But if we're going to talk monstrous line of the night, we can't stop at monstrous line of the night because we also have to call him the waiver wire line of the night because he's owned in 1% of fantasy leagues, and that is Mario Hezonja of the Orlando Magic. He had 28 points, including 8 triples. What the hell? 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 10 of 18 from the field. If you had have said to me, guess who the 25th ranked player is in fantasy over the last week, there is absolutely zero chance I would have told you it's Mario Hezonja. But in fact, it is. He is averaging 16, 5.7 boards, 2 assists, 3.3 threes, 1.3 steals, a block, shooting 52 and 88 with 56% from 3. Still a little bit baffling that the Magic did decline that fourth-year player, or their fourth-year option, team option, rookie option on his contract. Again, I don't really see what it was benefiting them not to do that. He had been completely out of the rotation when As Gordon was healthy. We do have John Isaac back now, but I don't know what to really make of this from Mario. He's shooting 40% from three on the season and 45% from the field, which is significant come-ups from last year where he was at 35 and 29.9. So has really improved his efficiency. He's a guy that's playing a lot more power forward now, but again, with Isaac back and then when Gordon comes back, where does he fit into there? Surely he is superior to Aaron Aflalo. Well, not surely. 100% he is superior to Aaron Aflalo. So if Evan Fournier remains out and with Terrence Ross out, maybe Hezonja can get some minutes on the wing. But Vogel has been pretty adamant that he's playing him as a four. I don't know if that'll stick. I'd like to see him get some minutes at the three, but I'm not adding him in 12-team leagues unless we get confirmation that Gordon is out long-term, which we don't at this point. Because when Gordon's back and Isaac's there, then you have Hezonja moving into that third-string role. Or if he does play along the wing, maybe he gets 20, 22 minutes a night. But the shooting numbers, 45 and 40 from the field and from three, I think they're decently sustainable. It's more that he's getting volume now. It was a guy that could handle the ball. Yeah, the steals and block numbers are a little bit elevated over the last couple of weeks. I don't expect that to necessarily continue, although it very well could. These are not crazy, crazy, insane numbers, and nor is he shooting. He's not shooting 65% where you go, there's no way that's going to continue. You know, over the last 6 games, he's at 47%. And you go, okay. Maybe that can happen, playing closer to the basket. Maybe that's something that Hezonja can do. So if you're in a 20-team league, sure. 16-team league, maybe. But the concern, of course, we have is when Fournier's back, and especially when Gordon's back, and to a much lesser extent when Aflalo's back, where does he fit? Where does he fit into this team? I would imagine he has pushed ahead of Aflalo, because Aflalo, I don't think, has had a good game in 5 years. At least Hezonja has had 3 of them or 2 of them in the last week. So he should be able to push ahead there and play a little bit of the 3 behind John Simmons, but it's not going to be the 29 minutes a game that he's playing now. It might be 20 minutes a game, and that's probably going to be something along the lines of a 16-team league guy, maybe a 14-team league guy. But awesome to see him do this. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with him in free agency next year if he can continue this form. But remember, it is 2 games with significant reasons as to why he's getting that playing time, but all credit to him because he's playing fantastically in that playing time enough to make the decision for Vogel a little bit tougher than what it perhaps would have been had he been as shitful as he's been in the past. The young gun of the night, my boy Bogdan Bogdanović. 18, 3 and 5 for Bogdan, 4 triples, 1 steal, 7 of 10 from the field. And I still do believe that there is a legitimate chance that he is the best player on this Kings team. I was discussing this with Aaron Bruski today. He says, oh, maybe it's Georgie Hill, maybe it's Budrick, maybe it's Will Cauley-Stein, but you can't give a... There's no definitive answer where you go, this is the best player on this team. And Bogdanović, recently, is really starting to come along. 31-minute average over his last 3 games, and in that time, he's the 72nd ranked player. Despite being dicked around by Dave Yeager all season, he's still the 143rd ranked player this season, and I would be absolutely considering him. In all 14-team leagues, I would add Bogdan. Now, he did suffer a knee to the thigh, which had him limping and grimacing towards the end of the game, so that's something to pay attention to. But I would add him in all 14-team leagues, and I would absolutely be considering him in 12-team leagues. I think that his his long-term value is significantly higher than Hazonia's just because the path to minutes is there. Will they continue to run George Hill and De'Aaron Fox together? Will we see Garrett Temple play the 17 minutes a night, allowing Bogdan to play 30 a night? I think that's a legitimate possibility. He can pass. He can get steals. He's been really efficient. He hits threes. He can score. I really do like Bogdan. It's been a rough-ish ride. But again, as I said, it's been rough. He's still a top 150 player in under 25 minutes per game. Push that to 30. Then we're really talking about a bloke who's going to be knocking on the door of the top 100 and should be looked at. Now, of course, you'll have your own decisions as to who you drop if you're going to go and add him. But he absolutely should be that guy where you go and look on your wire. Is he available? And if he is, then you can make that decision whether he actually works on your team. But he has got significant potential to rise and potentially be a top 80 guy this season. We have a European sweep of the lines of the night. We had Hazonia from Croatia get the first two. We had Bogdanovic from Serbia get the young gun. And then the Polish hammer picks up the dud of the night. Marcin Gortat, 7 points with 9 rebounds, 3 of 5 from the field, 1 of 4 from the free throw line. This bloke is still somehow owned in over 70% of leagues. He is the 140th. Oh, no, he's not. That's Bogdanovic. Bogdanovic is the 143rd ranked player this season. Gortat's the 138th in 28 minutes per game. And those numbers are coming down. Over the last 2 weeks, he's playing 24 minutes a night with the rise of Mike Scott pushing Markieff Morris a little bit more to center, with Jan Mihinmi playing better at center. Gortat's putrid. He's averaging 6 and 8 with 3 assists on 45 and 60% shooting. He's a positive contributor in rebounds only this season, and his field goal percentage has been a positive. I'll give him that. But he is just not a high upside guy at all. He is not a player that you should own in 10-team leagues, and he is not a player that you should own in 12-team leagues, in my opinion. I don't see him pushing back forward. This was the pattern with him down the stretch at the end of last season. I had many people push back on me when I said that, oh no, they were just preserving him for the playoffs. Well, if they're preserving him for the playoffs now, I don't know what to tell you. That he's struggling, he looks poor, and there are other options that they do have. So they can even exhume Jason Smith and run him some minutes at center, which might be preferable for the Gortat. And this, I like Gortat. I really have liked him. I thought he's been a really underrated fantasy player for the last few seasons. But the last season, he was in a poorer position, and it's getting worse this year. He's much older than many of you may think. He is almost 34 years of age. The decline has come, and I don't think he's getting any better. So you can go ahead, in my opinion, and move on from the Polish hammer and grab someone else for your fantasy team. All right, let's now get stuck in and talk about these four games from Sunday before we switch into DFS mode and preview the 10 games for Monday. The first game of the night was the Sacramento Kings. They took on the Toronto Raptors, the earlier game of the day. Talked about Bogdan already. This was a game where De'Aaron Fox was out with that thigh contusion and Zebo was resting. So it's really hard to get any sort of understanding of what Dave Yeager's doing. Although I could probably use that quote and say it for every Kings game. Because there was two starters missing, Yeager decided he needed to change three starting spots. So Scalabissier lost his starting job and Costa Kufos and Willie Cauley-Stein came in to play the 4 and the 5. It just feels like we're never going to see Cauley-Stein and Labissiere playing together, because when you've got two young people who could be foundational pieces or could be really strong parts of a rebuild, you probably don't want to see how they play together. That's probably not a good idea, even though you are rebuilding. You probably don't ever want to see them play together. Always best to pair them with a zero upside over the heel big man. That's probably the best way to do it. Anyway, Cauley-Stein played 33 minutes, 12, 6, and 4 with 2 blocks. He is a must-own player on the Kings. Now, I talked about Bogdan, and I'm going to talk about Georgie Hill in a sec, but Cauley-Stein should be owned, despite some of his lower minutes off the bench. But I just fear that Yeager's going to dick everyone around continually all season. As for Labissiere, surely no one's still stashing him. Outside of like 18 teamers, 9 points for Scal, so 9 minutes for Scal with 0 points coming off the bench. Now, in the last game when Fox got injured, Justin Jackson started the second half, but in Dave Yeager's full rebuild mode, he decided to start Vince Carter in this one. And not only did he start Vince Carter, but he played him 25 minutes. But you know what? I'm going to give him a marginal pass here because it was back in Toronto. It's most likely Carter's last time playing in Toronto. So I can understand the sentimentality of, you know what, Vince, you can go and start in front of your former crowd. We'll give you a bigger run. I actually don't have too much of a problem with that. Now, if it had been in any other situation against any other team that Carter had started and played 25 minutes ahead of Jackson or ahead of Bogdanovic, I would have been ropeable. But in this case, I'm okay with it. If Fox misses the next game, I would imagine we get Justin Jackson or Bogdanovich back into the starting lineup. Garrett Temple played 28 minutes. He'd been getting under 20 before this Fox injury. 18-2-2 with a steal and a block. Hopefully this doesn't make Jaeger go, well, we need to go back to giving him 33 minutes a night. Let's keep our fingers crossed. But of course, in a rebuilding year, Budrick Hield plays 17 minutes. Now, I was reminded plenty of times on the commentary that this was Budrick's birthday. And again, just another example, people who swear by the birthday narrative, doesn't always work. Actually, it doesn't work. It's a one of those ones where it's literally a coin toss, and that is another thing that I have looked into pretty significantly. There is no boost on as a general rule, and that's exactly what you want to look at. There's no discernible, actionable evidence to show that birthdays enable players to have bigger games, as Budrick had 7 points in his 17 minutes. He is not a 12-team must-own. Georgie Hill would be the guy I'd look at here. 16-1-5 since he came out and said, oh, the Kings, I thought they were pushing for something. That's why I signed here. Which he's either the dumbest man in the world or he's talking flat out of his ass. I don't know which one it is. But ever since he's come out and said that, he's been getting more minutes. So if he's playing 30 a night, you want to own him. So go and grab him if he is still around. On to the Raptors. There was no Serge Ibaka. So Jonas Valanciunas played big minutes. And shockingly, he performed. Absolutely amazing. 13-16 with 3 blocks for Valanciunas. It's never been an ability thing. It's a minutes thing. He played 27, then 30, and then went back to 21. Went, Dwayne Casey, the dick move, coming back to it. But then with Ibaka out, back to 27. If you want to go and take a flyer on JV, go and do it. And you're going to be hoping that Casey plays him 27 a night. I have zero faith that that's going to be the case. With Serge out, the Jedi, OG Anunoby, started at power forward. He had 11-3 with 2 steals and 3 triples. Not sure he's a 12 or 14 team league guy this year, but I do like his top 100 outlook in the future. While DeMar DeRozan had 21 and Kyle Lowry 16-5-7 with 2 steals. CJ Miles moved into the starting lineup and had 10 points in 22 minutes. And I'm going to get questions, I know it, about Norm Powell, who's had 2 strong games in a row, 14 points in 21 minutes. But as always is the case with Powell, there are reasons behind it. And I love Norm Powell. But he shot 5 of 5 in this game. So clearly, shooting that is not going to be consistent. And in this game, with Ibaka out, Anunoby moved from the 3 and moved to the 4. So therefore, there were minutes available. The previous game, CJ Miles was out, so he played more minutes there. When everyone's healthy, he's probably going to go back and play 12 or 13 minutes. Despite him playing better, just every time he pushes back to this 25, or earlier in the season it was 27, it was because people were out. And when everyone's back, he's going to come back to the pack. And that's what I imagine is going to happen here again. Dylan Wright had his 3 steals. He's one of the best steal streamers out there as he returns from his shoulder issue. The Orlando Magic and the Detroit Pistons, as I said before, no Az Gordon, no Fournier, no Aflalo, no Terry Ross. So we had a starting lineup consisting of Lord Alfred Payton, Shelvin Mack, John Simmons, Mario Hezonja, and Nick Vucevic. We talked about Hezonja already. Vucevic is just crushing it. 24-14-7, 4 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. He has been amazing. And every time I see it, I just think back to last season when they were starting Bismack Biyombo ahead of him. I get it. You have to try and find out what you've got. But Frank, just give me a call, mate. I could have told you Bismack's not up to it. Vuce has been fantastic this season. And look, he's got a real chance to be a top 20 guy this year. Real chance. He might not get there. And the return of Gordo and Fournier is going to drop his usage somewhat. But he is doing it defensively. He's getting passes, which is not something we've ever seen from him. He's been fantastic. Lord Alfred had a bounce back after a couple of piss poor performances. 15 points with 7 assists. While Simo had 23-6-7. A big night from John Simmons. But of course, his elevated usage, and that's one of the big parts of his game, is going to come down with Gordon and Fournier coming back. The other thing he's done in the last two games, I think he's had 15 assists across his last two games, Simo. And when Fournier comes back, a lot of that ball handling will go to him. So a lot of value will come from Simmons. Now, he is a must-own player, John Simmons. But if you could sell him high and get a top 60-ish guy back, if you could sell him for Fournier, I would do it in a flash. I don't know whether you can. But if you could do that, I would do it. Because the recent numbers from Simo look good. But when we want to, you know, factor in reasons, and there are reasons for it, and expecting maybe a drop-off, which I do, that would be something I'd look at. Also, I am rapt that John Isaac came back. You know, I'm a big Isaac fan. He didn't do much. 17 minutes, 1.2 rebounds, missed all 4 of his shots. But the fact that he's back after being day-to-day for like 6 weeks, it was encouraging. I don't think a lot of people are thinking he's going to be this 12-team league guy. I don't. They base it on the fact that Terry Ross is out and he's going to come in and play small forward, because originally, like when he was drafted, and I think his default position on many fantasy sites is small forward. He is not a small forward. He had played 4% of his minutes at small forward this season and the other 96 at power forward. He is a four who will transition into a five. He's 6'11". He's a rim protector. He's not a small forward in my opinion. So even though Terry Ross is out, I don't see that impacting Isaac a huge amount, maybe an extra couple of minutes, but he's not coming in and playing 26, 27 a night. Now, if he got 25 a night, he could be a 12-team impact guy with triple one ability, but he's not a guy that I'm really looking all that hard at in our 12-team leagues. DJ Augustin had a decent night in 30 minutes, but of course him and Mac are going to lose that value when Gordo and Fournier return. Onto the Pistons, Reggie Bullock, fourth straight start, 31 minutes, 20 points with 5 rebounds and 4 triples and a steal. And he is the hot name everywhere. But let me throw a few things at you. Okay, he's had these four strong games, no doubt about that. The last two games have come without Avery Bradley, therefore his minutes have been pushed up to 30 in both of those. In the previous two starts, he played 18 and 23. So that's not all that exciting. The other thing is over these last four games, he's shooting like 63% from two-point range. Actually, for the entire season, he's shooting 63%. There is zero chance that he continues to shoot that well from that range. So when that comes down, his field goal percentage comes down, his scoring comes down, and his opportunities are also going to come down. So you can look at the numbers and you can look at overall rank, which is not something that I ever recommend that you rely solely on, because you can look at Bullock's rank, which I'm going to bring up now and have a look at, so I can tell you exactly what I'm talking about. It's very, very high over the last week, and people will look at it and go, well, that's awesome. Over the last week, he's the 56th ranked player in those four games that he started. So you look at that and you go, okay, that's cool, but he's shooting 65% from the field and 60% from three with a true shooting of 80%. There is not one skerrick of a chance that that will be able to continue. He is also getting steals at a phenomenal rate, 2 steals per game over those 4 games, which again is not something that he's necessarily going to be able to continue. Now, the last season, he averaged 1.4 steals per 36 and then 0.8 the year before and 1.1. This year, he's at 2.1 and over the last week, he's at 2.7. So that is a huge, huge increase. And I just don't think that he's going to be able to maintain that along with the shooting percentages, which is going to drop him down, you know, in those rankings a significant amount. And as I touched on earlier, the Pistons only have 2 games this week. So if you add Reggie Bullock, are you actually going to be able to use him? I think the answer to that's probably going to be no. But the numbers do look sexy on the surface. Just remember the reasons and the unsustainability of it when you consider adding him. Tone Tolliver hit 5 triples for 17 points in 24 minutes. Now this guy, if you need 3-point streamers, he's on that list with the Duke, Wayne Ellington. He is one of those guys that's there and you go, I need threes. Who can I get? Yeah, Tolliver's going to jack him up. I can assure you of that. And he's got a chance to hit him and he's got a pretty solid rotational role. Toby Harris was all right. Reggie Jackson, the minutes have been way down for Jackson and he doesn't look quite right with that knee. So it's something to bear in mind. Now 17, 3 and 6 is still really good. But the numbers have been a little bit down for Reggie. So he's just a guy to keep an eye on. Now, Drummo had 12 and 6, hit both his free throws, 2 blocks. Pretty decent game. Well, Stan Johnson, actually one of his better games, 31 minutes, 7, 6, and 5 with 2 steals. But I think that when Bradley comes back, he goes back and plays significantly fewer minutes than what Bullock does, and there's not a lot to love there. Luke Kennard started for Bradley but didn't do a huge amount in that playing time. Also, no Boban Marjanovic for you Boban stands out there. The Indiana Pacers and the Brooklyn Nets, Vic Oladipo, man, just keeps going. 64% shooting in this one, 26, 7, and 3, while Miles Turner had 16 and 6 with a steal and 2 blocks. Good numbers from Miles. Don't think he's really ever going to get to 20 points. He's not a great rebounder, but I think he's still got a chance as a top 30 finish this season. It was a good game from Corey Joseph, who had 15 and 6, while Daz Collison had 14, 4, and 7. So strong play from both those point guards, but strong games from Corey Joseph are not all that common. This was also a big game from Domantas Sabonis, who'd been struggling. He had 17 and 8 in 21 minutes with 3 blocks. And I look at that, and that's great, and that's definite 12-team value. But is Sabonis a 12-team league guy? I would lean no. And I think that, you know, if you look back at his past games where he'd struggled to get 20 minutes, this was a game that Thaddeus Young struggled in quite a bit, and Sabonis picked up the slack. I just don't think that holding him, especially in a 10-team league, but holding him in a 12-team league, when you can occasionally get these games, but overall it hasn't quite been there, is necessarily the best way to go about it. On to the Nets. Jahlil Okafor, DNP CD. I don't see it. I didn't see it beforehand. I don't see it now. I think you can move on. The last game, he was a second half of back-to-back, and Jarrett Allen sat for whatever reason he sat as a DMP city, and Okafor came in and was not good, and now he's back out of the rotation. Will this stick? Will he play each night? Who bloody knows? But they did play three centers ahead of him, Allen, Zeller, and Acey, and that's not including Mozgov, who's also around there as well. So if you added him in 10s, forget that with Okafor. 12s, forget it. I was never that high on him, and this is pretty much why. Source Castillo, Nick Stauskas, was a monster in that last game. Legitimately had people ask me, do we go and add Nick Stauskas? And the answer to that was a clear no, because that was a game without Damari Carroll and the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb. And this is why. 0 points in 15 minutes for Stauskas. He's in the rotation. Yep, but is that going to actually mean anything? And when D'Angelo Russell comes back, he won't be in the rotation. Levert had 14-3-3 with three steals. I like him for a 12-teamer. And speaking of the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, he had been absolutely putrid prior to this game, but had 17 points, which included 14 in the first quarter, and hit four triples. But this is what he is. He's just streaky. He offers points on generally efficient shooting, and when he doesn't, he's shithouse. He is not, in my opinion, a 12-team league guy, as you've heard me say plenty of times before. Good game from Quincy Acey as well, who had 14 points in his 23 minutes, but we're not really getting excited about him in any stretch of the imagination. For the Cavs and the Wizards, the Cavs get the victory. Kevin Love, 25-9 with five triples. But I guess the biggest news for the Cavs today was that Shams Charania tweeting that Isaiah Thomas is targeting the first week in January for his return. And that's fine. He will return around that time, which is sort of when we're all expecting him to come back. But remember, when he comes back, he says he's fine to play now. But the reason they're holding him out is they just want to be extra cautious to get him ready and amped up towards the playoffs. And what that does in my head, it makes me think, well, I reckon probably for the first 2-3 weeks of January, he's going to be on a minutes limit anyway. And pair that with the fact that he now has to play with Kevin Love and with LeBron James, although Ty Lue has absolutely no qualms in limiting Kevin Love's usage, which is bananas considering how good he is. But when he's playing second fiddle to LeBron, Thomas A isn't going to be able to reach the levels that he did last year. He's probably a guy that, you know, I think will peak, if everything goes his way, peak top 25. And I think that's probably a stretch. But I also think that for January, he may not get to 31 minutes a night. He might, but he might not. So be careful trading for him. He's obviously owned everywhere, and you're going to be pretty excited. And I'd be okay, yeah, activating him decently soon, but I wouldn't activate him for his first game. He's not coming in and playing 30 minutes a night first game. I can assure you. He just won't do it. Again, with his return, Derrick Rose isn't playing for this team. Again, there is 1% doubt in my mind about that. I just don't think we're ever seeing Derrick Rose play for this team. I don't even know if we're going to see Derrick Rose ever play in the NBA again, to be honest. And that's it's sad in a lot of respects, but he is also a decently shit bloke. So my pity doesn't go quite as far as it would with some other people. Kyle Korver had 11 points, while Jeff Green...
My name is Jeff.
He had a decent game, 15-5 with two blocks for Green, but we know that we can't rely upon him on an ongoing basis. Tristan Thompson originally wasn't going to play, but then did, because of course, 4 points in 15 minutes, you'd have to be a pretty deep league to consider Tomo. While Chetty Osman, 5 points in 17 minutes. I feel like he's got a rotation role, at least until Iman Shumpert returns, but this was a game without Shumpert, without Wade, without Thomas, so he might not stick the whole season. But he's been pretty impressive over the last 3 to 4 games. For the Wizards, Markieff Morris didn't start the second half. Apparently, he had whiplash. They did an x-ray. Everything was fine. Then he did come in. But Mike Scott's been playing fantastically the last 2 games. But one thing I can assure you is that Mike Scott won't shoot this well. He can shoot this well at times, but he won't be able to continue it. 19-4-4 for Scotty with 3 triples, 2 steals, and a block. That is an absolutely fantastic line. And if it wasn't for Mario Hezonja, he was getting himself the waiver wire line of the night. Do you add Scotty? Deeps, 16s, 18s, maybe. I just don't really see it for him. Remember, Otto Porter was out of this game as well, which gave him an extra boost. Markieff was out the last game, and he's probably going to go back to an 18 to 19 minute role in the next game. Beal had 27-5-5, while Johnny Wall had 15-10-6. As for Oubre, he started, had 11-8 in 29 minutes, which is, it's just whatever. It's just so-so. He's not a 12-team league guy. Well, Tomas Satoransky played 25 minutes. Wasn't the best night for Tomas. 2-3, but he has locked down that backup point guard job, or at least for now, until Scotty Brooks changes his mind. That wraps us up. Man, this camera on this thing. If you're watching this video, I am actually a little bit sunburnt, but I'm not as sunburnt as what this camera is making me look. It makes me look like a tomato, like a beetroot. I don't know. I don't look, or few Americans, a beet, but we call them beetroots. I don't know why. Anyway, that's beside the point. It makes me look very, very red-faced. Hopefully I can get the new camera soon. All right, what I'm going to do now, I'm going to have a quick pause, quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk DFS for Monday, where we have got a monster slate on with a 11, or not, I keep saying 11. There are 10 games on Monday. We're going to be back to talk about that in a moment. But before we do that, we've got a song by, who is it going to be called? Oh, Jake McKelvey and the Countertops. And the song is called Oh, the Ghost. We'll be back pretty soon.
Mistakes and make me appear in the margin. I don't care how long it will take, 'cause I only want to enlarge it. And following me to the scene is doing me a great disservice, and making a mess out of me is really only doing me harm. It's really only doing me harm. Only in my dreams, it isn't in my closet, and you won't go searching with me because I have already lost it.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's talk perfect DFS from Sunday on FanDuel. Johnny Wall 42, Corey Joseph 28.7, Vic Oladipo 39.9, Brattles Beal 42.5, Jono Simmons 40.7, and Hazonia 45.2, Sabonis 34.1, Mike Scott 37.8, and Nick Vucevic at 58.3 for a total of 369.2, and that cost $59,800 on DraftKings. Hazonia's playing power forward, yet he is a point guard on DraftKings. Hazonia had 47.5, Reggie Bullock had
30.25.
He had 62. Domantas Sabonis had 33. Vuce had 60.5. Simo had 41.5. Mike Scott 37. And Valanciunas had 43 for a total of 354.75, and that cost the full $50,000 redos. Let's look at DFS action now for Monday, 10 games. We'll start with Boston and Indiana. The Celtics are favored by 2.5 into this one. The total is 206.5 points. The Pacers, the only team that's coming off a back-to-back on this Monday slate as well. At point guard, I like Daz Collison a lot here, 5,600. It's just a strong cash play. There's not a massive real upside for Dazza, but I think at 5,600, you should have a decent level of confidence of him getting to close to 30. And yeah, the ability to get to 35, which is strong for cash, and there is a little bit of tournament appeal there. As for Kyrie, 8,100, a 40-pointer from him should be considered relatively decent also, so I think that he and Collison are both in play in this matchup. I wouldn't be banking too much on Corey Joseph repeating what he did, nor Shane Larkin or Terry Rozier, who is quite cheap, but yeah, good game in the last one. I just don't buy it for Rozier. He's too up and down, and his upside's not high enough. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart's at 5,600. If I'm spending 5,600, it is going on Daz Collison, not on Marcus Smart. And then Victor Oladipo, he is priced very highly, but FanDuel has dropped him a little bit, 9,300. He's putting up some okay numbers. You feel at some point it's just not going to happen at that sort of salary, so I'm not really willing to invest in him in cash, but I do think he's got some tournament upside. But shooting guards have had a quite difficult time of it against the Celtics this season. Now, Oladipo is superior to most of them, but at that sort of a price tag, any sort of negative matchup makes me lean a little bit more tournament-y with him. At small forward, I like Jaylen Brown a lot at 5,500. I think that's strong for cash. That's, you know, 27 points. Not a difficult task for him, while Bojan Bogdanovic at 46 is always just a tournament type of guy. For the power forwards, it's the Deuce Young, 6,200. He struggled quite a bit. Now, he was dealing with a bit of an injury, so maybe that can make you be a little bit hesitant. But I think that, you know, him getting 30 points is not that difficult to imagine in this matchup. Jason Tatum's at 55, and while he did have an absolute monster in his last game, his previous games hadn't quite been there, so I'm not really onto him. Or Sabonis at 4,300 again. Strong game today. I'm just not sure in the limited minutes if it's a great option to consider him a cash type guy. At center, Al Horford's at 7,600. I think this is a really good spot for Al. Good matchup against Miles Turner. We've seen centers do really well there. This is a 40-45 point upside night for Horford. So even though his price is quite high on FanDuel, I am in on him. As for Turner, just too high. 7,900. Give me Horford every day of the week. Now, Turner's numbers recently have been improved, but if I'm spending that in mid sevens, I'm taking the 300 less. I'm taking Horford, who's got a good matchup, and Horford, we know, is a very good defensive center. If we flick this over and look on DraftKings, not many great upside tournament type guys. There's some guys that I do like for cash. Jason Tatum's a bit too highly priced. Yeah, Sabonis is even higher, more higher priced over here. I like Oladipo at 87. That has cash usability. Al Horford at 6,900, I absolutely love. While Miles Turner at 6,300, that is a big, big difference. And that transforms him from being a maybe on FanDuel to being a DraftKings guy where I go, you know what? At that price, I don't care how good Horford is. That is a strong, strong option to use. As for Thaddeus Young, he's at 5,900. Again, you should feel pretty good about him getting that cash level. Daz Collison's at 55. He's not a bad option as well on DraftKings. Probably not quite as appealing as what he is on FanDuel, given the salary cap discrepancies and the fact that their prices are pretty similar, but he is still a pretty good guy to have a peek at. The next game we'll look at is the New York Knicks taking on the Charlotte Hornets. No spread currently because we don't know if Johnny O'Brien is going to play. No, we don't know that actually, but because John O'Brien left the last game at halftime for personal reasons. But the guy, of course, we want to know about. He missed last game with that knee problem. If he is back, it does change quite a few things. If he is out, then Mick Beasley becomes one of the better DFS options. It's on the slate. He did kill it in the last game where with Kristaps out against the Thunder. At point guard, Frankie Ntilikina, you can look at his last game and go 4 points in 13 minutes. What the shit's that? Well, the reason was is he got into foul trouble there. So I imagine he gets back to his 25 to 27 minutes and can put up 25 to 26 points. But I'm not ready to lock him in cash just yet. I think he's still got some GPP upside, but not ready to go with him at cash. Kemba at 8,000, I do like a lot. You know, Kemba has done very well against the Knicks in the past, and we're talking 50-point upside here for Kemba, so I like him as a cash option. Carter Williams, Jarrett Jack, rugged Ronnie Baker. Probably not. At shooting guard, Jezza Lamb, 4,500. You know what makes me laugh, and this is no offense to anybody, but I know you American guys that listen to this show, or anyone who's not Australian and listens to this show, and hears my nicknames, and go, oh yeah, I love the Aussie nicknames, and hears me say, yeah, Jezza, or Lazar, or Tezza, or whatever it is, like that. And then they try and throw it onto other people's names. And it just doesn't work. I don't know what the exact rule for it is. Like someone said to me, oh, if someone was Jason, can we call them Jezza? Like, this is not, we don't say that here. We don't call people Jason Jezza. Jezza is Jeremy. And I don't know what the rule is, but I'm glad that you guys are taking it on board and trying to grab the nuances of Aussie nicknames. I can't explain why certain nicknames happen. They just do. But yeah, it's not everyone's name that can just have an Ezza on the end. It's not how we roll. And again, it's one of the like unwritten rules of Australian nickname vernacular. But anyone that, if you want to ask me one, go ahead. And I'll let you know. But yeah, there's probably fewer of those Ezza ones that you anticipate. Oh, right. Anyway, Jez Lamb, 4,500. Nick Batum's getting a lot of minutes, and that is making me go no to Jezza. As for Batum, 6,400, 38 minutes in the last game, 35 points, obviously a really good return to form. But at 6,400, I'm not ready to bank on Batum just yet at that sort of a salary. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist at 4,800. He's had some pretty bloody good games, in fact, but also some piss poor ones. I don't really rate what he does for DFS. He's not someone I'm interested in. 6,000 Courtney Lee, that is interesting to me for cash. I feel like 30 for Courtney is almost a lock that he's going to get that. While you got Doug McDirt on the other end at 3,800, and that's probably 3,700 too expensive. Lance Thomas is starting, but he is doing nothing with those minutes. At power forward, Marv Williams at 4,400. Low upside, low floor. That is a no from me. While Frank the Tank's at 3,600. I don't mind throwing Frank into a GPP. He can go off, but he's really done lots of nothing recently. Porzingis, 9,400. Sawney, doubt that he plays. Not interested in him, but Beasley is the one you want to take a look at. He is up to 5,900 though, so it is taking a level of reliability away from him at that price, but I still like his ability to at least get to 30 with Porzingis out, but it's not really going to be a lock-in cash type of situation, but he does have that 45 point up. So we sort of have 46 in the last game. So he's got that ability to do that if Kristaps happens to be out. At center, Enes Kanter's at 6,300. I'm not feeling that at all. He hasn't reached 30 points in the last five games. I'm not interested in him. While Dwight's at 8,500. I feel like I'm getting 40 out of Dwight here against Kanter. His lowest score in his last five has been 36. That is a very, very strong floor. He's got 50-point upside. I think that he is a decent, or better than decent, cash option at center. Let's flip it to DraftKings now. For tournaments, it's Frank the Tank, but there's two Frank the Tanks playing in this one. This is Frankie Ntilikina, 4,200. I think that's got some tournament upside. Whereas for cash, I love Nick Batum on DraftKings. 5,700 is really strong to me. Dwighty Howard at 78 and Kemba at 71. Love Kemba Walker at that price. And then Courtney Lee at 58. I think he's a fairly good cash lock who does have some limited upside. Let's go on to the next one. It's Miami and Atlanta. The Heat are favored by 2.5 and the total is 202 points here. Jim Johnson has been ruled out for the next 7 to 10 days with an ankle injury, and Justice Winslow is questionable with his knee strain. Now, if Winslow can't go, if Johnson's out, which he already is, what's going to happen at power forward? Well, you could get Kelly Olynyk starting next to Bam Adebayo, or you could get a big Jordan Mickey game, which is what we had in the last one. So that is very, very interesting. Mickey in DFS, even Justice Winslow at almost minimum salary is going to have some appeal if he plays. For the Hawks, Mike Muscala is out. Just another one of these blokes who has been day-to-day, him and Bielitsa, John Isaac, just day-to-day every day for a month, and it's shitting the hell out of me. So Muscala is out, but we've got the Baptist, John Collins, and Lukey Babbitt both probable. The Hawks are very meticulous about listing guys as probable, but they will almost definitely play. Let's talk point guards. Goran Dragic, the Iron Shoulder, 6,100, has been quite disappointing lately. I'm not really feeling him in cash at all, but this is a good matchup, and he does have that 35 to 40 point upside. So there is some tournament value there, whereas Dennis Schroeder at 7,700 against a Heat defense, which is quite tough for point guards to go off against, I am not really interested in Schroeder at that price. At shooting guard, Bellinelli at 3,700. That's a no from me. Deion Waiters at 5,800. It's been okay, averaging 27 across his last three, which is all right. It's not spectacular. Now, we know Waiters can go off, but I just don't really feel it from him, and that's someone I'm not really keen on. Kent Bazemore at 5,900. If I'm spending 59 or 58 on Waiters, I take Bays over Waiters. I feel more confident in what he can do, and that's a big thing for me to say regarding Kent Bazemore. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 4,300. The minutes are fine. And if Winslow's out, I think he's going to play 30-31, and I'd be really, really interested in using him in this positive matchup if Justice happens to be out. So there is something to see there with the Duke. At small forward, Winslow at 3,600. I wouldn't feel great about him in cash because he is a little bit up and down even when he gets the minutes, but it's really tough to ignore that for tournaments given the absences of Hassan Whiteside and Jim Johnson. The artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, 5,400. I think that is a quite solid cash option, 26 to 27 with 35 to 40 upside. So some tournament value there and some pretty strong cash numbers where Joshy Richardson has been caning it. If he is still available in your seasonal league, by the way, please add him. Surely if you listen to this podcast, he's not still around. I've talked about him enough for you to believe in him. Now, his salary has risen pretty sharply, 5,500 for Richo. That's because he's putting up good numbers, a 28-point average over the last five. Again, if this injury for Jim Johnson, Johnson's out, and if Winslow's out, then I love Richo at that price. He's going to have more ball handling responsibilities, play 36, 37 minutes, you know, play more at the three, more at the two. He's going to be all over the place, so I really do enjoy seeing him at that price, even though it has gone up. At power forward, Cal Olynyk, 6,200. That's pretty high. If Winslow's out, though, I am okay using that for cash. The other guy we want to have a look at is Jordan Mickey, who's at 3,900. He had 32 in the last game. He can block shots. He only played 27 minutes. And if we have Winslow out again here, and no Johnson, no Whiteside, I love that. And I think that becomes really a cash option for Jordan Mickey, as weird as that sounds. Ersan Ilyasova's at 5,100. And some of his games, you go, oh, he's been playing well, but has he? Like, he does okay as he's biggish games and some piss poor ones. I wouldn't want to use him outside of tournaments. I have no interest in cash. Wells, the Baptist, John Collins, 6,100. His first game against the Heat this year yielded 33 points in 18 minutes. He is an absolute animal in terms of getting numbers. He's averaging 32 over his last three games, which is okay at 6,100. I'm not ready to lock him in at cash yet. Foul trouble, limited minutes as he works his way back. Not ready to cash him up. Bam Adebayo at 5,000 gains more appeal if Winslow is out. It's still a fairly high price for a guy who most of the time is fairly limited fantasy-wise, while Miles Plumlee is the starter, and that's all I have to say about Miles Plumlee. Let's go on to DraftKings and see how this game looks. At tournaments, Dennis Schroeder, I think he's more of a GPP guy. He's at 7,200. That's worth a look, but again, it's quite a negative matchup against the Heat. And then we've got some cash options. Joshy Richardson at 4,800 is super strong. Kent Bazemore at 58, I think, is pretty decent as well, although not as good as on FanDuel. Whereas the Baptist at 5,400, I'm okay with getting Johnny Collins in cash at 5,400. At that price, that's fine. While Olynyk at 5,000, I can't see any way that he goes under 5X, given the injuries and given his ability to put up fantasy numbers. Unless he gets himself in foul trouble, he's playing 30 and he's probably putting up 30 as well. So I really do like Kelly Olynyk over on DraftKings. Let's go to the next game. It is the wrong button. Let's go to the Utah Jazz and the Houston Rockets. Derek Favors is questionable with that concussion that kept him out of the last game. Raul Neto has already been ruled out. Rudy Gobert, of course, is out with another knee injury that's going to sideline him for a month. If Favors is around in your standard leagues, go and add him. But unlike last time, Jonas Jerepko doesn't look like he's going to be the primary beneficiary. Joe Johnson started the last game now that he is back from wrist injury, and Jerepko played minutes in the teens as Johnson got the big playing time there. So, and prior to that, it was like Jerepko is going to get his 25, 26, and he's going to play well. But I think with Joe Johnson back, that does change things. On the Houston side of things, Clint Capela missed the last game. He's questionable with a heel contusion. He's going to be fine long term. We don't know if he's going to play, but it's not a great matchup for him against, Gobert, but Gobert's not playing. So it's not a bad matchup at all for Capela if he happens to be out there. Jim Harden's also dealing with some pain, but he's going to play through it and put up some okay numbers. Okay, he's going to put up some bloody good numbers because he is Jim Harden. At point guard, Chrissy Paul has been just killed in terms of salary. 9,900 for Chris. He's been putting up just huge, huge numbers. We know that. But 9,900, I am not interested against a slower-paced Jazz team. That is way too expensive. Ravishing Rick Rubio at 4,900. He showed us something 2 games ago. 39 points, 30 minutes. Yes, yes, yes. And the last game he had 17. So I could consider using him, but he's really only a GPP guy. With Rocket Rodney Hood and Alec Burks there also, it does limit Rubio's upside. At shooting guard, Jimmy Harden's at $11,000. Yep, totally in on that. I'd rather spend the 11 on him than the 9-9 on Paulie. Eric Gordon at 49, just not really even sniffing that level of value on most nights. As for Rocket, he's at 5,400, maybe as a tournament guy, but I feel like his upside is pretty capped given the other players there. Whereas Don Mitchell, he's not losing shots, he's not losing minutes. He's at 7,400. He could easily drop a 50, but I'm not confident in his floor just yet to consider him a cash play. As for Birksie, 10 minutes in the last game. If you are still owning him in 12-team leagues, there's going to be someone else better out there, so I'd be more than happy to make that move. PJ Tucker, if Clint Capela's out, Tucker could get the start. He had 30 points in the last game, so at 4,400, you could put him into a GPP pool, but he's just not really that dynamic of a fantasy scorer. Trevor Ariza's at 54. I just don't think that his ceiling's very high for a tournament play, and I was going to say his floor's not great, but it's all right. The last 5 games, 27-point max, 23-point minimum. So that's a good range. But at 5,400, is it really doing enough in a slower pace game? I'd probably end up fading Ariza here. Jingle and Joe's at 5,300. I would rather take him than Ariza. I think his upside's probably a little bit higher. Well, Joe Johnson, minimum salary, should start. Has got 25-point upside here, so I think he is a definite GPP target. At power forward, Ryan Anderson's at 4,400. He could start at center and do nothing as he does most of the time, so definitely not looking at him as a cash option, even if Clint Capela's out. Well, Derek Favors, if he is in at 5,500, I think you have to consider that a cash option, you know, 30, 32-point type of guy at that sort of salary. So I think it's worth looking at, assuming that he's ready to play. At center, Epe Udo, who has played very well in Favors and Gobert's absence, had 49 points in that last game. So if Favors is out, you are all aboard the Epe Udo train. He's at 4,700. I would be locking him in cash if Derek is out. If Derek is in, I'm not going to be so keen on really getting behind him. He'll play like minutes in the teens, if that. So don't get overly excited about Udo. As for Clint Capela, 7,400, if he's ready to go, sure. But given the breathing issues, the soreness of the foot, I'm not really going to be getting too interested in Clint Capela, even if he is ready to play. On DraftKings, for tournaments, Chris Paul's at 9,000. Like, you can even make the argument you could use him in cash at 9,000. I won't make that, so he's more of a tournament guy. And for cash, I like Don Mitchell. The Don's at 6,700. Now, that's a price where I feel more confident about his floor. So I like Mitchell here. Jim Harden's at 10,500. Strong with that one also. And Jingle and Joe's at 4,900. Some real value in those guys. Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker, some other guys you might want to look at, but of course, we're only going to be looking at those guys as tournament options, and if I'm going to pick one of them, it is going to be Ryan Anderson, and really more in a situation where Clint Capela is out. The next game is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Chicago Bulls. Joel Embiid has already been ruled out for rest. It's the first game of a back-to-back. We assume that he'll be back for Tuesday, but he did play 49 minutes across the weekend, so perhaps he's going to rest both. I'm not of the belief that he will. I think he will be back for Tuesday. Gives him 3 days off in between games. I think he should be right for that one. As for the Bulls, Lauri Markkanen is still questionable. If Lowry is out, of course, fire up your Nick Miritich's and your PunchBob Shiplokes, who's been putting up some really good numbers. But the problem here is on FanDuel, both of their salaries have gone up. Miritich is up to 7,000, which he's been exceeding. But we're only going to be using that if Markkanen is out. And Portis is up to 5,000. If Markkanen's out, I'd be all over Portis at 5,000. I don't know if I'd be so keen on Nick at 7,000. That's quite expensive. At point guard, Chrissy Dunn's at 7,500. He's been good. Not sure he's been that good. So I think he's more of a 30-33 point guy rather than a 37-38 point guy. He's got 50 point upside, Chrissy Dunn, so he could be a tournament player. And point guards have had a pretty decent record going up against the Sixers. I just don't feel great about him as a cash play. Jared Bayless, Jaron Grant, a couple other point guards on the slate, same as TJ McConnell, not really keen on them, although McConnell has torn apart the Bulls in the past. I just don't really think that's a realistic expectation. At shooting guard, without Embiid, I imagine JJ Redick is going to get a big, big bump in his usage. So he is not a lock for 30, but you should be considering 30 a pretty decent outcome with 35 to 40 point upside. So I like JJ Redick here, even though on the surface that price is too high. Without Embiid, it does swing things in his favor. Whereas Justin Holiday, he is at 4,800. So it's a big dip in Holiday's price because he's been not so good. But I still feel good about him getting 25 points. So that makes him a guy that I feel okay about utilizing. At small forward, the hammer, Denzel Valentine, 4,100. Not really doing it for me, unfortunately. Or David Nwaba is at 4,900. A strong last game from Nwaba where he put up 31 points. I still don't feel good about his floor, and I'm not sure his upside's that great. But you could use him as a tournament, much like Bob Cove, who's at 7,400. And without Embiid, we're talking a 45-point upside here. So I think he's a strong, strong GPP guy. At power forward, there is no Embiid, of course, so Amir Johnson might get the start. He's a minimum salary player. He could very, very easily go out there and put up 30, or they could decide to start Rashawn Holmes, or they could start Johnson and play him 20 and play Holmes 28. There are a lot of variables to this. The other thing is Trevor Booker is out with his ankle problem, so it's going to be all Holmes and Johnson in that position. So it gives both of those guys value, Holmesy at 45 and Johnson at 3,500. But Johnson, of course, is $1,000 less. And if they do give him more minutes, then he has got a real ability to go past it. So I like both of those guys in this setting. Benny Simmons at 9,900. Not really seeing anyone on the Bulls going to be able to shut Simo down. No Embiid, so maybe a little bit more usage, perhaps a 50-55 pointer here. I think he's a strong, strong cash play. Markkanen, Miritich, and Portis. I talked about them already. I haven't talked about Markkanen. I won't be using him. And of course, I won't use Miritich or Portis if Markkanen's back. But if he is out, then PunchBob at 5,000 is definitely worth a go. He's averaging 33 across the last three games that Markkanen's out, whereas Miritich is averaging 39. But that $2,000 discrepancy in their price would make me take PunchBob. Rashawn Holmes listed as a center, 4,500. I really, really like that here. I think he's going to put up some numbers. And then Bob Lopez at 5,500. I think he's not a bad cash option here. Lopez, really limited tournament upside, but you could get your 27 out of him and feel decently comfortable that that's what he's actually going to bring. On DraftKings, Amir Johnson's at 35, really like that. And Bob Cove at 63 is a strong, strong tournament play. And then for cash, there's a lot of guys I like for cash. Rashawn Holmes at 41 is great. JJ Redick at 56. Dario Saric at 58. I think he's a super strong 35-point not quite floor, but pretty bloody close to it guy on DraftKings. And Chrissy Dunn moves from a guy that's too highly priced on FanDuel to being 6,800's worth on DraftKings, which is definitely a more appealing scenario for Dunny. Talked about Simo already at 9,600. He is also a really good option with Embiid out. Let's move on to the next game here. We've got the Portland Trailblazers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. No spread currently out for this one. Nemanja Bjelica. Last week, Tom Thibodeau on Friday said, oh, we're expecting him to be out for another week. Cool. 2 days later, he's questionable. Now, I don't know if this is him being questionable as he's been every single day for about a month. I don't know. So I would be absolutely leaning towards the doubtful side of questionable to Bjelica, but we will see. And the other guy is Jim Butler, who is questionable with a back issue. Now, if Butler's out, that just throws everything out. The last time that Butler missed, Shabazz Muhammad started, but he is not in the rotation. So could Marcus Georges Hunt start and Andy Wiggins move across to small forward? That would be my estimation. And we know that when someone starts for Thibodeau, they're playing 30 minutes. So Georges Hunt could be an interesting guy. Or does he go back to Muhammad and play him 28 minutes? Or does he do the most un-Tibbs-like thing possible and split the minutes? That is almost sacrilegious for him to actually play a minute split. So we'll see how that all goes down. But of course, that is going to be a big, big question as to what Jimmy Butler does. And then if he is out, how those minutes are distributed and the shot attempts. At point guard, Dame Lillard is at 8,700. I really like that for Lillard in this matchup. This is a 45-pointer, I believe, for him. So I think he is a strong, high-end cash point guard. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
He is at 6,400, a real monster in the last game. 42 points for Teague in that disappointing loss for the Timberwolves. I don't feel super good about using him here. He's a little bit hit and miss for me and not a massive upside tournament play. Shabazz Napier back in the rotation, but not really providing too much with his role. At shooting guard, I like CJ McCollum a lot at 6,900, a good cash play. While Wiggo's at 6,300. Which Wiggins are we going to get? The one that can go for 50 or the one that just shits the bed and gives us 20? I really like him for tournaments here, especially if Butler is out. Then I would even lean towards Wiggo as a cash option in that scenario. Pat Connaughton and Jamal Crawford, the other shooting guards. If Butler is out, Crawford at minimum salary absolutely has tournament appeal. At small forward, Evan Turner's been starting. He played 34 minutes in the last game, and he's at 3,800. He only put up 17 points in that start, but 3,800 for a 30-minute per game potential starter? Maybe. But I don't really see huge upside in him. As for Butler at 9,000, sore back, probably going to be that a fade there for me. At power forward, Al-Farouq Aminu, 5,200, has been not good lately. And it's because some of his early performances, let's be honest, they were flukes. He's hitting 5 threes a game, which is just not going to be something that you could rely upon to continue for Aminu. And that has definitely fallen away. Not interested in him. Taj Gibson's at 58. That's a cash bang to me. I'm all about Taj Gibson in cash at 5,800. At center, Townsie is at 10,700. Probably a little bit too expensive. Although, if Butler is out, I'm all aboard that. I think that is a great, great spend of 10.7 if Jim is out. As for Yusuf Nurkic, he is at 6,800. He's returned from his ankle. He played 25 minutes in the last game. Minutes still limited. We know Towns' defense hasn't been ideal. I think Nurkic is just a tournament guy, though, not really an upside type of play. Not really a safe floor type of play. On DraftKings, for tournaments, it's Wiggo at 61 and it's Nurkic at 62, both with significant upside there. And cash options, Lillard at 89, Townsie at 88. Love Towns at 88. That is so, so cheap, and I'd be all over that. And then CJ McCollum at 65, I think he's also a pretty good cash play over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next one. Denver and Oklahoma City. Carmelo Anthony taking on another one of his former teams. Steve Adams is doubtful with a concussion, so we're going to see more Pat Patterson, more Jeremy Grant, more Dakari Johnson. And Manny Moutier is questionable for Denver. Now, what Denver's going to do, I have absolutely no idea. Torrey Craig started the last game, D-League call-up, and then Malone's like, oh, I really like what I've seen from him. Why don't you play him more than 6 minutes at any other point during the season? So that was a weird one. Will Nikola Jokic start? I don't know. I would assume so. he seems to be getting himself back into business. I would imagine Jokic starts, and I would imagine Fareed plays next to him and starts. But I also imagine that Fareed plays like 16 minutes and Trey Lyles gets the bulk of those power forward minutes. And I think Craig will get some minutes, but I also don't think he's going to necessarily play big starters minutes, because in that last game, Will Barton was returning from a back injury. I don't know why they needed to ease Barton back in considering he missed one game, but that is Dr. Malone's medical opinion. At point guard, Russ Westbrook's at 11-3. Jamal Murray, he gets criticized for his defense, and at times rightfully so, but he has improved a lot this season. Now, point guards are still putting up some decent numbers against the Nuggets, but 11-3 doesn't make Russ an absolute lock into every lineup, but I would still consider him someone to really look pretty closely at in cash. Jamal Murray is now up to 6,100 because he's getting lots of minutes and putting up big, big numbers. I'm still not in on him as a DFS everyday cash type lock, especially at a price of over 6,000. But I think he's got that 27 point, you know, floor almost here with some decent upside. So you could consider him a guy to look at. Fat Face Ray Felton, Manny Moutier, nah. Shooting guard, Andre Robertson, 4,600. He was back. He only played 21 minutes in the last game. Not really interested in using him. While Will Barton's at 6,700. And I think you should feel decently comfortable that you're getting 31 or 32 out of Barton and have that ability to get to 40. So I do really like him quite a bit here. Gaz Harris at 6,700.
Nice, Gary!
With Barton back, with Jokic back, 6,700 just feels a little bit too high. I think he's more of a 28-point guy than a 33-point guy, and that takes that value away at that sort of a price tag. At small forward, Paulie George is at 8,100. He had 42 against the Knicks. I think a 40-point expectation is not unrealistic for George, so he is a pretty good cash and tournament play. Where Baby Neck Wilson Chandler is at 45, that's a fade from me. At power forward, Mello's at 6,700, has done very well against Denver in the past. I think he is worth a tournament look. His numbers have been, you know, fairly atrocious recently, averaging just 27 over his last five. But you give him 40 points here, and that's smashed through that value, so there is something to pay attention to. While Trey Lyles, still under 5,000, 4,900, had 40 points in the last game in 30 minutes. As I said, don't panic if Ken Fareed starts. It's not guaranteed, but Lyles should still get the bulk of the minutes. But with Dr. Malone in charge, look, anything's a possibility, but I still do believe that Lyles will get more minutes than Fareed. It was weird in the preseason. We had Malone, you know, really favor Lyles and then completely fall right off him at the start of the season and now back in love with him. So there is some level of attraction there between those two. At center, Nick Jokic, 8,900, has averaged 48 points the last three times against the Thunder, and now Steve Adams isn't playing. The only problem we have holding him back is his own personal GP, and that is Mike Malone. Will he allow him to play big minutes? He only played 22 minutes in the last one and put up 31 points. If he's back and playing 32, then at 8,900, I love it, but I don't really trust the doc right here, so it is going to be tough to utilize Jokic as a cash play at this point. I'm not really all that keen on Dakari Johnson or Patrick Patterson, even though Steven Adams is out. Where are we looking at now? Over on DraftKings for this game. For tournaments, it is Jokic again at 8,100, just because I don't have the certainty in what the doctor's going to pull out. For cash, I like Russ at 11-2. I like Paulie George at 7-6. I like the Blue Arrow quite a bit on DraftKings at 5,700. That's, you know, looking like a 30-point type of guy, while Trey Lyles at 46 is also worth a look. So very similar plays on FanDuel and DraftKings. Farton Will Barton also an option over on DraftKings too at 6,400. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Jay Triano, he screwed the rotation. He screwed the system. Greg Monroe came in for one game, started for Tyson Chandler, and then was out of the rotation again. Now, mind you, in that start, he played 30 minutes and was very, very good. So if anyone can work out anything Phoenix is doing, I don't know. He put up 37 points in 30 minutes in that last game. Is this going to be Alex Len's turn to sit? Was things mucked up by Chandler missing a game for personal reasons that threw the rotation out of whack? At this point, I literally have no idea. And with the point guards, no idea. Remember Mike James? Man, we've got to convert him. He's so, so good. DNP CD last game so that Isaiah Cannon could play. Now, for what reason? I have no idea. Now, Cannon is a guy that was signed with an injury exemption. So when Devin Booker returns, someone's ass needs to get cut and it's going to be his. So what's the point? You just showed some faith in Mike James moving forward and now you take him out of the rotation completely to see what Cannon can do, or maybe you're going to cut James now that you've converted him and keep Cannon. All in all, this team is just a shit show from everywhere. Tyler Ulis had 4 points in 21 minutes. He's at 4,100. I can't rely upon him. Neither can you. Dennis Smith at 5,700. He may or may not be ready to play with that groin issue or hip issue that's kept him out. If he is out, then Yogi Ferrell and JJ Barea, they gain a massive level of value increase. Plus, it's a super sexy matchup for them, so there could be some real numbers for JJ or for Yogi. Yogi at 4,800 is a tournament guy. We really like that, of course, if Smith happens to be out. At shooting guard, Troy Daniels putting up some big numbers. He's at 3,600, hitting a lot of threes. I don't think he's a cash guy, but I think he is definitely a tournament guy with 30, 35 point upside. Wes Matthews at 48 has zero consistency, so I'm not really all that interested in him outside of tournaments, and that's about it. At small forward, the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 7,100 against the Suns. This is fine. 33, 34 points is a decent floor type value, which I think is what you should look at for Barnesy with 40 point upside in this match. Joshy Jackson, minutes have been reduced so that Daniel House can get more playing time. Not that Jackson's been playing well, but not really feeling too much about him here in this one, while TJ Warren really struggling with Devin Booker out. 7,800, that is way too high, and I have no interest in him, considering he's averaging only 27 across the last five. At power forward, Dirk is at 4,900. I think Dirk is almost a lock to get you 26 here, and that makes it good value at 4,900. Maxi Kleber at 4,400. Big games and absolutely shitful games. Makes him an interesting GPP guy, but of course, that is it. Marquise Chris is just, he is so, so bad. Dragan Bender.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
3,700 for Bender. He hit 5 threes in the last game and put up 26 fantasy points in 30 minutes. Can he continue to have a big role? Let's bloody hope so. It is Triano in the Sun, so anything is possible. I'm not feeling super confident, but there is some, some intrigue there. At center, Tyson Chandler at 5,000. He should play again against one of his former teams. At 5,000, I'm not sure there's much tournament upside. He might be worth a look for cash, but who knows? He only played 20 minutes in the last game because Alex Len went off, and I don't know if Len's going to play. I don't know if Munro's going to play. Len was absolutely fantastic in that last game. He's been really good all season. It hasn't stopped him getting random DNPs. You could consider both of those guys GPP plays because whichever one gets the minutes, Munro or Len, they're both going to be worth looking at. The problem is that Greggy is at 5,900, so it's probably just a little bit too expensive for Greggers. On DraftKings, tournaments, Troy Daniels at 44 and Maxi Kleber at 37 are interesting. And for cash, I like Dirk at 46 and the pencil at 6'8". TJ Warren is much more appealing on DraftKings. He's at 6,300. That would open him up to some value. And of course, if Dennis Smith is out, then Yogi Ferrell at 5,000 is absolutely in play. Whereas JJ Barea at 6'2", that's probably a little bit high there for JJ. Where are we? Let's have a look at the next game. There are two games to go here. Long podcast today, guys. The Clippers and the Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 11.5, and the total is 203 points. Kawhi sat out the last game, as did Tone Parker for rest. They are likely to be back, whereas Dan Green missed the last game with groin tightness. He is questionable. If he is out, Bryn Forbes is going to get that boost. There's not a lot to love from the Spurs side of things here for fantasy, I don't believe. At point guard, Milos Teodosic, 4,900. He had 27 in the last game. I think he's absolutely a great cash play with tournament upside. Really do like Milos here. And Austin Rivers is likely back from his concussion. He's at 5,800. That's probably just a little bit too high for Austin. So I think he's a fade. Pat Mills at 3,700. Not really much there. Tone Parker, the same story. At shooting guard, Lou Williams, 7,100. That is a massive, massive drop in salary. I guess it's because we're going to have Rivers and Teodosic around, but I still think 7,100 for Lou is absolutely worth a look. Yeah, he shit himself last game and only put up 18 points, so that's far from ideal, but he is absolutely worth a look. And the other guy you could throw into a tournament is Manu, who had 26 points in 23 minutes in the Spurs last game, another game winner. He is someone that you can look at, and it is a decent matchup for Manu, but I wouldn't be locking him into cash or anything like that. Jawan Evans played some pretty good games over the weekend, but with Rivers coming back, he may not even be in the rotation. We will see. At small forward, Rudy Gay, 5,900. Kawhi's back, so that limits Gay. Not really there for me, while Kawhi's at 6,000. Now, we don't exactly know what his minutes are going to be. He'll probably be limited. But in his last game, he put up 28 points in 17 minutes. And at $6,000, if he gets 23 minutes, he can smash through that. This is a great, great matchup for Kawhi. I think he's absolutely a tournament guy who, if he comes out and plays 28 minutes, then he could smash through the $6,000 price tag. Definitely not a cash play, though. Wes Johnson has been significantly kneecapped by Doc Rivers lately, so Sammy Decker's getting more playing time. I don't really feel good about either of those guys with the Rooster Danilo Gallinari out. At power forward, Aldridge is at $8,400. I think that's fade city to me. Not really interested. Jameel Wilson will probably start. While the table, Montrezl Harrell's at 38. There's just no appeal with really any of those guys. At center, Powell's at 5,100. He has been just disgusting. 8 points over the last three in 18 minutes. But at 5,100, that is a super cheap price for Powell. So I do actually like him for tournaments. And DeAndre Jordan, I love. 8,200, just getting 40 pretty much every night. You know, one of the better cash centers that's out there, I believe. I think you should be able to get close to 40 again. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It's the Golden State Warriors. Actually, did I talk DraftKings? Where's my DraftKings thing? Nope, I've lost it as well. I will attempt to bring that back, and then I will talk DraftKings for that game in a... Well, there it is. Just talk amongst yourselves for a sec as I load up the Spurs-Clippers game on DraftKings that I so rudely forgot to discuss. The last game of the night is the Warriors and Lakers, as I mentioned, which we'll talk about in just a sec, but we already know that Draymond Green has been ruled out, Sean Livingston has been ruled out, and Zaza Pachulia has been ruled out, along with Steph Curry. On DraftKings for that Spurs-Clippers game, Powell at 5,100 has that value, as I talked about. Milosh is at 4,900. I like him for cash. Lou at 74 and DeAndre at 71. I love DeAndre at 71 over on DraftKings. Let's now go on to this last game of the night. It's the Golden State Warriors and the Lakers. No Draymond, no Zaza, no Livingston, no Curry. So we're going to get Caspi, Jordy Bell, and probably Pat McCaw starting for the Warriors, opening up a ton of value. Now, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope missed the last game. He will likely play, but he is not allowed to travel to road games outside the state of California for the next 25 games. So it's going to cost him about 5 to 6 games. But this is at home against the Warriors, so he's ready to play. So that takes away the value that Josh Hart had in that last game. At point guard, Lonzo Ball's at 7,300. He's averaging 34 over his last five. I don't think he's a horrendous play. I think he's more of a tournament guy, but if you used him at cash, I don't think it's bad. He has been playing quite well lately. Quinn Cook is at 3,500. I think Pat McCaw gets the bulk of those minutes as the only two point guards on the roster. You could use Cook as a tournament differentiator, but I don't feel all that good about that. At shooting guard, McCaw's minimum salary, in on him, but not for cash. He is a little bit up and down, but I still think that if you wanted to use him in cash, it wouldn't be the incorrect move. Jordy Clarkson's at 5,000. He is as up and down as they come. I think that he is, if I'm going to go cash, it would be in this matchup. I think there's something there for him, but he is tough to use. Whereas KCP is down to 5,400. I love that for tournaments. We know that he's a 45-point upside player who can go off at any moment, and he generally plays okay against the Warriors, especially defensively, and maybe that can fuel his offensive game. Klay Thompson not really doing too much at the moment. At 7,200, I end up probably fading him, while Uncle P, Nick Young, if you want to go revenge games, Uncle P is back. Will he get enough shots up? Well, there's going to be opportunity for him, no doubt. So he is a GPP option, I believe. At small forward, Caspi's at 45. I love that for cash. 39 points in the last game for Omri. While Iguodala at 4,400. Give me Caspi every day of the week. While Brandon Ingram's up to $7,000. I don't think it's a bad option. There are better cash plays out there, but it's a decent 40-point upside tournament play and not a bad cash guy to look at. Whereas Durant at 12,000, if you can fit enough cheap players around him, which you might be able to do in a 10-game slate, love that for cash. Otherwise, he's an awesome tournament guy. At power forward, Jordy Bell's at 4,700 for a bloody good reason. He put up 31 points in 24 minutes in the last game. He's going to get mid-20s in minutes again, and that should render him as a guy who could really approach 30 points here. So I like that. Julius Randle at 53, I think he's strong for cash. Really feel confident with his floor. Larry Nance, not really feeling. While Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP at 5,400, he's played some decent minutes lately, and you should feel pretty good about using him for cash. I actually would prefer Randle, though. Save the $100, and I feel like he's going to be able to do things in more categories than what Kuzma does, which gives you an extra level of reliability. At center, Brookie Lopez, 42, no way, not in the slightest. Damian Jones and JaVale McGee, I'm going to have to say no to both of those guys. Let's have a look now at some other sites. At the time of recording this, the DraftStars slate wasn't up, so we'll do a Yahoo first. For tournaments, Nick Jokic is worth looking at here. The the prices of the high-end guys on Yahoo is super, super high for Monday. So don't be surprised if you don't have any of the studs in there. Joshy Richardson, another tournament guy, David Nwaba, Bojan Bogdanovic, Tyler Johnson, Pat McCaw, Jordan Mickey. Mickey probably moves to a cash play if Winslow's out. Some cash guys, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, Maxi Kleber, David West, Trey Lyles, Frankie Ntilikina, Omri Caspi, Jinglin Joe, Kelly Olynyk, Rashawn Holmes, Jordy Bell, Nick Batum, Šarić, Benny Simmons, and Kev Durant. On Moneyball for tournaments, we've got Mallow, we've got Nick Batum, Mirotić, Joshy Richardson, David Nwaba, Justice Winslow, Pat McCaw, and Jordan Mickey. And for cash, we've got Trey Lyles, Dirk, Omri Caspi, Jinglin Joe, Jamal Murray, Milos, Rashawn Holmes, Jordy Bell, the Pencil Harrison Barnes, Kemba Walker, Paul George, Ben Simmons, and Russell Westbrook. That does it for today's show. Guys, again, if you are watching on YouTube, apologize for the absolutely shitty video quality here. Hopefully I can get that camera sorted ASAP. If you are watching on YouTube, subscribe, give it a thumbs up, and leave a comment below. And of course, if you are listening audio and on Apple Podcasts, go give a 5-star review. It's a great way of supporting the podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. You can also find the podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify. And we are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Damian Lillard.